we are spending some time exploring some different rhythms and different practices in our lives. And these practices, these rhythms, and I want to go back to what we've shared over and over again, is that these are really everyday actions in our lives that help us to become capable of things that are currently beyond our power. And today what I want to do is I want to talk with you about a rhythm that most of you, actually all of you, are very familiar with because you're actually doing it right now. You are gathering. That's right. I want to talk to you about the rhythm of gathering. Would you say that word with me? Ready? Gathering. All right, do not be a tough crowd today, okay? Don't do it. All right, love you. Gathering. And here's the thing, I don't want to just talk about like why church is so important, how great church is, and church this, church that. All right, today what I want to do is I want to talk to you about why I believe this rhythm of gathering, this rhythm of gathering together in Christian community is something that is absolutely vital to you, to me, to anyone who really wants to become the person that God created them to be. Now, if you know much about me, if you're new, or if you don't, maybe you know me a whole very well, or you're new to the Orchard, one of the things you have to know is this is not a topic that I share with you as a pastor who talks about these kind of things because, well, pastors are supposed to talk about church, they're supposed to talk about why gathering is important because, well, if people stop gathering, then your pastor doesn't have a job. All right, so no, that is not my approach whatsoever. Listen, what I want to talk to you about today comes out of a very, very long, complicated, up and down, and at times very painful journey, very personal journey. In fact, those of you who know me well know that the church journey for Scott Hodge has, it has not always been an easy one for me. And so if you're someone who maybe you do struggle with church, and maybe you're here, maybe you don't even want to be here today, and you don't know how you ended up here or whatever it might be, and you struggle with church, I just want to say that I understand. I understand. And it's okay, because it has been a real struggle for me as well. Now, most of you know church is something I'm very familiar with. I was raised in the church. I was born in the church. I mean, I wasn't literally born in a church, but I might as well have been. Right, my earliest memories are of sleeping in the church pews, you know, because, well, back then, church services were a lot longer than they are today. And so, you know, but that's my memories of church. I mean, some people use the word Christianity. I use the word churchianity. That was me, church, man. I know it really well. And I've had some pretty interesting experiences in church. I've seen church. I've seen the good side of church. I've seen the bad side. I've seen the ugly side. It's been quite a journey for me. But I have seen the good side. I've seen the church. Well, I've seen the church be pretty beautiful. I've seen the church reach out to people and bring hope to people who were on the verge of completely giving up all hope in life. I've seen the church reach out in generosity and love and serve those who are in need. I've seen the church reach out to neighborhoods and cities and communities and bring transformation unlike any other organization or group of people. And, you know, in many ways, I've seen the church at its best. But I've also seen the church at its worst. Now, I've seen church people who call themselves Christians be uglier, meaner, and more judgmental than many people I know who don't call themselves Christians or who want nothing to do at church. Yeah, in fact, as a pastor's kid, you know, my dad was a pastor, and as a pastor's kid, I mean, I saw people who were filled with a ton of Bible knowledge, and they could pray the greatest prayers that made them sound like theological geniuses, but who in an instant could turn around and treat my family and treat other people in ways they wouldn't even consider treating their dogs. You know, one time as a kid, I remember one individual who became so angry at my family, at my dad and my parents, that one night this person broke into the church offices, which I knew how to do that because I was the pastor's son, but it wasn't me. But one night this person, they broke into the church and they stole the church membership list. And the next day they sent out a letter that was full of slander and lies about my dad, about my family. Sent it out to the entire church directory, including my grandparents. You know, I've watched as people who my parents poured their life into, who they loved, who they baptized, whose children they dedicated, I mean, family members they did funerals for, visited in the hospital. I watched as some of those same people became so quickly and easily offended, usually over something so minor, and then just walk away. Just walk away. And they usually they'd either walk away and say nothing, and you don't know what happened. Or they would do just the opposite. They would walk away saying a lot of things, usually hurtful things, and things that brought division and schism. It hasn't been easy for me to always love the church. It's been a challenge for me at times. It's been a struggle for me. In a way, it's almost like how there's friends of mine who've described, you know, living with an abusive parent. Like on one hand, they know they love that parent, but they also at times want to be as far away from them as possible. I think in many ways that's how I have felt about the church. And yet here's the ironic thing, is the very thing that I've struggled with the most and the very thing that I probably carry the most amount of baggage with in my life is the very thing that I've devoted my life to. Why? I'm crazy. Carlo Coretto was an Italian Catholic writer who wrote this poem that I think captures this paradox that I feel so well. Many of you might be able to relate. This is what he said. I'm not going to put it on the screens. I just want you to listen. He wrote this: "How much I must criticize you, my church, and yet how much I love you. You have made me suffer more than anyone, and yet I owe you more than I owe anyone. I should like to see you destroyed, and yet I need your presence. You have given me much scandal, and yet you alone have made me understand holiness. Never in the world have I seen anything more compromised, more false, yet never have I touched anything more pure, more generous, or more beautiful. Countless times I have felt like slamming the door of my soul in your face, and yet every night I have prayed that I might die in your sure arms. No, I cannot be free of you, for I am one with you, even if not completely you. Then, too, where should I go to build another church? But I cannot build another church without the same defects, for they are my own defects. And again, if I were to build another church, it would be my church, not Christ's church." Said so well. The reason that I've given my life to this thing called the church is because even amidst all of the mess, And the ugliness and the dysfunction that I've seen, I believe with all of my heart that when the church is doing what it's supposed to be doing, that it has the potential and the ability to bring transformation into this world like nothing else. I really believe that. And see, that's our dream for the Orchard. You know, we talk about this sometimes, maybe not enough, but our dream for this community is to be a community that really is a transformative presence, a community where people's lives, regardless of where they're at in their spiritual journey, can come, and they may not agree with everything, they may not understand it, but they'll say, "Man, I know that I'm loved, I know that I'm accepted." And the hope is that we can help every one of you, all of us, take steps forward in our journey of following Jesus and see our lives be transformed. And then not just stop there and say, "Well, good, I'm transformed. Now I feel better about myself." But no, be transformed so that we can partner together and be a part of transforming neighborhoods and cities and communities and ultimately even the world. That's our dream. But what I really want to talk to you about today is not all that. What I really want to talk to you about today is about you. You. And I want to talk about why I believe that what happens here every weekend is not just important and not just a positive thing, but I want to talk to you about why I believe that it will be almost impossible for you to become the person God created you to become without being in this constant rhythm of gathering together in Christian community. Now, you got to understand that what I'm going to share with you today, I haven't always felt this way. In fact, I probably over this last year, year and a half, 2 years, have really journeyed to a different place with my heart and my attitude about this. But I haven't felt as strongly, but I do feel some things today. You're going to feel this. You're going to feel my passion. Now, I know there's many of you, you're in this rhythm. This is your life. You make church a priority. Come hell or high water, my mom is one of them. She's here. She would be here if it was snowing 1,000 inches outside. She would find a way to get to church. She'd have to do the sermon, because I don't think I would even show up. And so there's some of you, it's very consistent rhythm. There's others of you, not so much. Others of you who maybe, some of you, you see church as just one more thing to do on the weekend. You have your checkoff list, and maybe you make it, maybe you don't. And let me just say, though, it's okay, it's okay. This is not one of those talks to try to make anybody feel bad. All right, everyone here is at a different place in their journey, and the truth is you are loved, whether you're here one time a month or 15 times a month. You're loved, and we're glad you're here, okay? So my heart is not to make anyone feel bad. But then I think there are even others of you, and maybe some of you who are listening online right now, who you want to follow God, but you don't want to be a part of a church. And again, I want to say I understand, but my hope is that this talk here today would help give all of us, I guess maybe a better understanding of why this rhythm is so important and so vital to us becoming the people God has created us to be. Now, the reasons that I'm going to give you, and you might want to write these down if you have a pen, but the reasons that I'm going to give you, you got to understand, these are not going to be real deep theological reasons. All right, these are going to be much more rational reasons than emotional, because my hope is that the response we give would be more of an intellectual response as opposed to just some emotional response that we feel in the moment but probably won't feel next week or next month. So, let's begin. And I want to begin by going back to creation, to one of the very first things that God said after creating man, and it was this, Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I'll make him a helper, a companion." And if you know the story, we're told that God takes Adam, and he takes a piece out of Adam, and he creates a woman by the name of Eve. He creates a companion. Now, here's what you've got to understand. God did not create Eve out of response to the sin problem. He did not say this after sin showed up. He said this before sin even showed up on the picture. Okay, in other words, this was a part of God's original plan right from the very beginning, which means that you and I, we were created. We were made for companionship. We were made for community. It's always been a part of God's plan. And so the first reason that I want to give you for why gathering together in Christian community is absolutely vital is this right here. Number one, it is not good to be alone. Would you say it with me? It's not good to be alone. Now, it's interesting because sometimes when people think about church, you know, if you were to walk up to the average person and say, "Hey, you know, when you hear the word church, what do you think of?" They're probably going to say, "Well, I think of like a church building, steeple. I think of programs and services, and you know, if it's an unchurched person, they're going to say, "I think of someone asking for money all the time, right?" But we have all these ideas that come to mind when we think about church, and all these things, they can be good things. God uses these things, but the fact is, you can have a church without having a building. Did you know that? You can have a church without having services that look exactly like this. You can even have church without having a gazillion programs. But there's one thing you have to have if you're going to have a church, and that one thing is called people. You've got to have people. If you don't have people, you don't have a church. You might have a building, but you don't have a church. And so I think maybe a healthier way for us to see church is instead of seeing church as something I go to on Saturday at 5 o'clock or Sunday at 9 or 11 o'clock, I think a healthier way to view church is instead to actually see church as something we are on Monday and something we are on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. We are the church. I am the church. Would you say that with me? I am the church. Turn to the person next to you, say, "Hi, church." Go ahead, tell them. Say, "Hi, church." They're the church, right? See, the church is the people. And the bottom line is, you and I, we need people. See, here's the thing. Listen, for a Christian, okay, our spiritual journey, our quest, whatever you want to call it, should never be an individualistic quest. Should never be individualistic. It should never be done outside of community, outside of friends, outside of a church community. It should never be done alone. How many of you this week, you walked into Starbucks and you saw what I saw, the red cup, right? Oh, yeah, don't you? Isn't the red cups are kind of a love-hate thing, right? Like, oh, it's very nice, but it also reminds me what's coming. Snow, Christmas, right? By the way, Christmas will be here in 49 days. I know you hate me now. You don't have to like me, but you have to love me, but you don't have to like me, okay? In fact, Advent begins in just a couple of weeks. Few weeks from now, we're going to start a new Advent series, which I'm really excited about. But one of the huge themes of Advent is not the red cup, okay? One of the huge themes of Advent that we see in the scriptures is what's called incarnation. What is incarnation? Well, incarnation is this idea that God has moved into the neighborhood. God has shown up. He has come here in the form of his son, Jesus, to show us what it would be like for God to live among mankind. And Jesus came not to live above us, not to live under us, but to actually live in community with us. I mean, think about it. Everywhere you look in the Gospels, you see that Jesus was with people. He was with fellow humanity. He was eating with them. He was spending time with them. He was knowing them. He was being one of them. You know what that tells us? I think what that tells us is that Christianity is always as much about dealing with each other as it is about dealing with God. Christianity, it's about dealing with each other just as much as it's about dealing with God. See, the call of God is twofold. It is to worship divinity and to link yourself to humanity. Love God, love people. It's both. See, that's a part of the very essence of Christianity, to be together in concrete community with all of the real human faults that show up in community and all the tensions that it drags us into. Community does that, doesn't it? See, the story of God's people, the story of the journey of God's people has always been far from being the spiritual journey of just one solitary individual of God. It has always dragged a people, a church, a nation, a human race right along with it. It's always been that way. It's never been about just one person. And so to attempt to make spirituality some sort of private affair in our lives, man, that's to reject your very nature. Man, it's to walk inside of a loneliness that God himself has said is not good. There's something really powerful that happens when you engage in Christian community. And when you do it on a regular basis, okay, for one, it forces you to engage in some hard realities of things like grief and pain and suffering with one another. You know, I'll tell you, one thing that I see as a pastor that brings me such joy is when I see the people of God reach out to one another during times of pain and crisis. And I don't mean like, well, so I got to do it because my small group manual says I have to reach out to someone because they're hurting. No, no, I'm talking when it just organically happens, man, because there's relationships that are there. And in fact, this weekend, there's a young girl in our church who lost her father. Father passed away a couple nights ago. And you know, Facebook is pretty amazing because it does kind of keep a lot of that stuff in front of us. And I watched as people made some of the greatest, just great comments of like, I'm praying for you. I'm so sorry. And on a side note, you know what I notice about Orchard People on Facebook that I love? Orchard People aren't full of a bunch of Christian cliches. I love that. What I see, the verbiage that I see come out of Orchard People all the time is real, authentic honesty. I mean, it's man, I'm sorry. It's not, oh, well, just one day you're going to see him again. It's okay. Let's praise the Lord. Oh, that's, no, how about, never mind. That's not helpful, right? I mean, so I love that about Orchard Community, but this lady I watched as she dealt with this pain, and people just reach out to her. Now, hopefully it doesn't stop on Facebook. Hopefully it transcends into some sort of physical reaching out and loving and caring. But it's such, those are the moments when the church is at its best. See, being in a community, being in this rhythm of gathering, it forces us to engage the hard realities that we experience with one another. But you know what else it does? It forces us to engage in the hard realities about ourselves. That's right, about ourselves. This rhythm of gathering and engaging together as a community, it is absolutely vital because, and here's the other another reason, is because it gives us the truth about ourselves. Gives us the truth about ourselves. See, here's the thing. When you're on your own, when you are the Lone Ranger and you are away from others in community, you know what you have? You have an open field to live a completely unconfronted life. You do what you want. See, I'm convinced this is why some people never engage. Or why some people only engage part way, right? Because they don't want that. They're afraid of that. Well, they want just enough church to feel good. Give me a few goosebumps, but don't make me uncomfortable. Right? I'm convinced that's why some people, they want just enough small group to feel the warm fuzzies and to have some great chips and dip or something. Or just enough small group to be recognized by a few more people, but they don't really want it enough to be confronted or challenged with what's going on beneath the surface. They want to play it safe. See, do you know why this is so important for us? I'll tell you why. It's important because it is so easy to lie to ourselves, isn't it? Man, it's easy to lie to other people, but sometimes it is really easy to lie to ourselves. But see, when you engage in this rhythm of Christian community, it makes it awfully tough to do that. It makes it hard because eventually the truth emerges. Fantasies, they're dispelled. See, sometimes people, here's what I see. Sometimes people rationalize not being a part of a church community by blaming it on the church. They blame it on the church, right? They find fault with the church, which, by the way, that's not very hard to do. I mean, hey, come hang out with me for a day. I will give you plenty to find fault with. All right? I mean, not nearly as much as Adam Mock, but I'm joking. No, but I will give you plenty to find fault, all right? Listen, and so see, that's what people do, though. They focus on maybe what the church is missing. Well, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. You know, it should be doing this better, or the style of music, I don't really like the feel of it, or I'm just not getting fed. Or they point out all the imperfections and all fill in the blank, and here's the thing, that's easy. It's so easy to do that, to deal with that stuff. But let me tell you what's not easy to deal with, and what sometimes is actually very painful to deal with, that is our own fantasies about ourselves and our own goodness. That's painful. That is not easy. It's a lot easier to point to others. It's a lot easier to point to the church, to everyone outside of ourselves. But see, in the grind of real community, all that becomes painfully obvious. But you know what it does? It becomes so freeing. That's why Jesus said, you'll know the truth. The truth will make you free. Yeah, the truth will make you flippin' miserable at first, but it eventually will make you free. It'll bring freedom. And so this rhythm of gathering, it's important for the sake of ourselves. So I go to church so that other people can help carry the unhealth that's inside of me. And I go to church so that I can help others carry the unhealth that's inside of them. See, as you begin to engage in healthy relationships, whether it's through serving or you're leading or you're involved in a smaller environment or whatever it might be, as you begin to engage in relationships with other grace-filled followers of Jesus, you know what you're doing? You're doing that. You're inviting healthy critique into your life. You're inviting accountability into your life, which is a huge part of what you and I need to become the people God's created us to be. We've got to get honest with ourselves. Now, as a pastor, let me go to the next one. As a pastor, one of the things I see all the time, and you see this too, is how easily people quit things in their lives. You ever notice that? Man, there's a lot of quitters. And I don't mean people who've tried for, you know, and they needed to stop doing their business, you know, because it just wasn't working. Or I'm talking about people who just so easily give up on their marriages. See that all the time. People who give up on friendships. People that give up on jobs. The minute they get challenged to develop in their job, they don't want to deal with the pain of that, and so they just give up, right? Or they give up with their schooling or whatever. You know where else I see it? I see it in the church. As people give up in the church. People quit. People walk away way too easily. Someone's feelings get hurt. They have a tough conversation with someone, and they don't know how to reconcile it. Someone says something in a way they shouldn't have said it, just like everywhere else in life, but it's the church, so it's worse, I guess. But then people, what do? They pull back, they withdraw, and eventually they leave the church, and then they leave the church, and then they get offended because no one noticed that they left the church, even though they hadn't been involved in anything for 6 months. People quit so easily. And see, here's the thing. I think the reason people do this, not just in church, but in every area, in many different areas, they do this because it's so much easier to walk away than it is to actually dive into the mess. It's so much easier. Listen, it's easier to walk away from your marriage than it is to dive into the pain of your marriage. It is easier to walk away from a friendship than it is to try to work through the pain or the trouble or the situation. It's so much easier. It's so much easier to walk away from the church than to actually confront whatever it is that's going on. It's so much easier to walk away. And so see, this rhythm of gathering, you know what it does? Is it forces us to learn this thing called commitment. Man, it's vital because it teaches us commitment. Would you say that word with me? Commitment. It teaches us about commitment. See, here's the thing. True, I'm just going to be straightforward with y'all right now. Is that cool with you? All right, too bad for some of you. True biblical commitment does not walk around with an exit visa in its back pocket. Okay, listen. A lot of Christians do that, man. It's as though they walk around consciously or unconsciously and in a way almost blackmailing the family that they're a part of. And so they have this exit visa in their back pocket with the family that they belong to, and they're saying, well, I'll stay with you as long as I deem you worthy. I'll stay with you as long as or until you radically disappoint me or until you confront some behavior that is out of line or out of hand or unbiblical or whatever it might be or until you challenge me too deeply, then I'll reach for it. Here's the thing. As Christians who want to embrace biblical commitment, we cannot, okay, listen, we cannot opt in or out of the church as it fits our moods or our phases of growth or our preferences. That's why I tell people all the time, don't buy into, when you're part of the Orchard, don't buy into the methods or the style, because the methods and the style, if they stay the same, we'll find ourselves irrelevant, right? We'll find ourselves not reaching anyone. And so there's times that you have to change. You can't always do the same thing all the time. But what always remains the same is the mission of Jesus. So buy into the mission of Jesus that the Orchard is about. Don't buy into the methods, because if you buy into the methods will change. You'll get disappointed. It's much more than just the methods and the styles. Do you connect with that? Do you understand what I'm saying? All right. If you want true biblical community, sometimes you have to do the same thing you have to do if you want a great marriage, great friendships. Sometimes you have to fight for it. Sometimes you have to say, you know what? I'm going to have that tough conversation. And can I tell you, when I look around this room, I see many of you, you've done that. There's times that I've let you down. Other people have let you down. We've dropped the ball. I mean, just a few weeks ago, something happened and there was a lack of follow-up with a pastoral care situation, and someone sent an email, and I said, I'm sorry, that doesn't represent who we want to be. You know, but they came, they talked. So many of you, you've done that. You've come, you said, man, I'm struggling with this, I don't understand it, or, you know, we've had the difficult conversations, and you've remained committed, and I honor you for that. See, this teaches us about commitment, and I know it's not easy, especially when you're dealing with people, right? Because people drive you insane, won't they? Don't look at me like that. People will drive you insane. Sometimes people will hurt you intentionally or unintentionally, right? But what do we expect, right? The church is made up of people, not angels. Sometimes we just need to be reminded of that. Someone one time, they said, you know, as long as there's horses in the stable, it's going to stink. As long as there's horses in the stable, every once in a while, you're going to step in it. What's that smell, man? Something smells around here. Well, have you checked your shoes? Same thing in the church. People are messy, and so there's always going to be messes to deal with, always, right? Someone once said going to church is one of the best cardiovascular exercises known to man. Here's what we got to remember. Being a part of a church has very little to do with just liking each other or finding others who we are perfectly or mutually compatible with. Look, the group of disciples that Jesus had around him, I would say they were probably not real mutually compatible, okay? I mean, they were from very different backgrounds. They had very different temperaments. They different visions even of what Jesus was all about. I mean, they were all a big pains in the butt, okay? I mean, they were jealous of each other. At times, they got furious with each other. But you know what they did? They loved each other in the biblical meaning, but they did not necessarily like each other. It's okay. You're not always going to like everyone. There's people in community you're not going to like. You wouldn't necessarily say, like, hey, come hang in my house for 5 days, right? It's not about that. But see, this is what it means to be the church. It's not necessarily about to being with others who are emotionally or ideologically or in any other way compatible. You know what it is, though? It's about standing shoulder to shoulder, hand in hand, precisely with people who are very different from us. And with those people, hear a common word, pray some common prayers, learn from a common book, share a common meal, and offer mutual forgiveness so that in that way, we actually are bridging our differences and we are becoming a common heart. That's the church. That's the church. Is it easy? No. But the fact is, you and I cannot deal with a perfect, all-loving, all-forgiving, all-understanding God in heaven if we are not willing to deal with a less than perfect, less than forgiving, less than understanding community here on earth. You can't separate the two. You can't. We cannot bypass a flawed family on earth to try and relate to a non-flawed God in heaven. You want a beautiful analogy for this? Look at this image. That's it. That is a beautiful metaphor for the church. If you were to walk up to that scene 2,000 years ago, and you didn't really know what was going on, and you were to approach it, you know what? At first, you would not be able to make a distinction between who was guilty, who was innocent. I mean, if you were to walk up to it, you'd see one landscape. That's it, one. God on a cross between two thieves. That's the church, man. That is the perfect image for the body of Christ. You know why? Because the church is the place where you're going to find both grace and sin. And you're going to find sanctity and pettiness. You're going to find fidelity and betrayal, all apart of a single horizon. Single horizon. See, the church will always mess up. And I'm not just talking about people in the church. I'm talking about the church at large, man. The church, the big C church, will always mess up. Why? Because of this image right here. The church is hung between two thieves. That's the reality. And so we don't need to be surprised. We don't need to be shocked when people mess up. We don't have to be how badly the church has betrayed the gospel or in the future how much it may betray it more so in the future. It has always struggled, and it will always struggle until the day that Jesus returns and perfects it. It will always struggle till then. Look, gathering together in Christian community is about learning to live with those and forcing us to rub shoulders with those who are different from us. And when we do that, it changes us on the inside. But I'll tell you what else. This is the last thing I want to say to you. One more reason why this rhythm should be a must in our lives is simply this: because we can do more together than we can do alone. We can do more together than we can do alone. My friend and my mentor, Dave Gibbons, he says, great vision comes out of great relationships. Isn't that true? Great vision comes out of great relationships. That's the power of Christian community. See, alone, if you are standing apart from Christian community, you and I are no more powerful than our own personality and our own charisma, which in a world of 7 billion people really is not that much. But man, when you join forces, when you are a part of a beautiful community, you become a part of something that is so much bigger and so much greater than you or me. And that's something beautiful. That is good news, because alone, you and I, we might be able to make a splash, but that's about it. But man, when community is working on all cylinders, man, the ripples of that can transform a neighborhood, a city, a nation, the world. And man, when that happens, you know what picture gets painted? Let me show you. I'll close with this. Acts chapter 2. This is a beautiful picture. This is my prayer for us. Acts chapter 2, verse 42, it says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Do you see what it says? They devoted themselves. They committed. Verse 43, everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Listen. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Was there trouble at times? Yes. Were there disagreements? Yes. Were there opportunities for offense? Yes. But they were devoted. Verse 47, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And it says the Lord added to their numbers daily those who were being saved. Listen. Our city deserves that kind of church. Our community deserves that kind of church, because that kind of church will change the world. I say that we give that a shot. How about you? Let's bow our heads. Let's pray. So every week in this series, we've given you different words that I think help us to engage in these rhythms. And the word that I want to give you this week, just as you're sitting with your eyes closed, the word that I want to give you this week is the word we. We. Would you say that with me? We. It's a powerful word. Because by saying the word we, you know what we're saying? We're saying, I recognize that it is not good to be alone. And so I choose to be in community. I choose to engage in everything that comes along with community. I choose to gather together with the people of God. And when we say we, man, we're choosing truth. We're saying, you know what? My life, those areas that are so easily to live in denial about and to pretend aren't there, I choose truth over that. And we're saying, I value commitment. And I'm going to stand with my fellow brothers and sisters, even when it gets uncomfortable, even when they offend me, even when I get upset. I know it's not easy, but I'm committed, because it's just as much about me as it is anyone else. And man, when we say that word we are saying, you know what? We can make a far greater difference than any of us as individuals. And so the call to us today, I think, is to just examine where we're at in our lives. And some of you, maybe you've not really engaged in Christian community. I want to encourage you to take that step in your life. And even if it's not here, because we know the Orchard's not going to be the right church for everyone, that's okay. But I want to encourage you to find a biblical, grace-filled church community that you can become a part of. And so, God, together now as your people, we just take a second, we imagine what a church community could look like. What it could look like filled with people who said, I'm committed. This is my rhythm. Not when I feel like it, not just when I like the topic or when I just like the people, but I'm committed because I am the church. And because I am the church, that means the only way the mission of Jesus will go forward through this church is with every heart, every hand engaged and committed. And so, God, thank you for painting such a beautiful picture in the scriptures for us to shoot for. God, you've given us such a vision, such a dream. Thanks for letting us be a part of it. We surrender our hearts, surrender our lives to you today, God. We ask you to work in us and to work through us. And we pray, God, and we ask these things together as your people. And everyone said, amen.
God, thank you for where you're taking us in this series. It's turning out different than I would have ever thought. But I think what you're doing, it's going back to that image I had a few months ago of how I think you're reaching deep down inside of us, and you are pulling out those roots, those unhealthy roots out of our lives, because there's something really, really that you want to grow in that space. And so, God, we present ourselves to you. We present ourselves to you, God. We bring to you in petition, we bring to you our anxieties, those things that we worry about that could happen, might happen. We bring to you our pain, our hurt, our wounds, the things that have happened. And we bring to you our disappointments, the things that, well, have not happened. We bring them to you because you are safe and you are good. And just like we bring our sin to you, we bring our brokenness to you. We don't hide it. We don't wear a mask. We don't pretend it's not there. We don't ignore it. Instead, God, we bring it to you knowing that you are so, so good. So we lean into your strength and your ability. God, give us the courage to take this, and to live it, to apply it. And as we do that, God, we trust that you will give us more and more and more of your strength and your ability. So God, before we go, we sing the song that we sang earlier, just and maybe even as we sing this, guys, let's make this, I don't know, maybe just like let something snap inside of you, something good snap inside of you. Let it snap inside of you that says, yes, God, this is right, and I'm going forward.